scale position that you have there. So you mentioned the OECD's number of identified fragile states. So turning specifically to your World Vision and Brookings piece, which is called State Fragility is Key to Reaching the Last Mile and Ending Poverty. And as I mentioned, there'll be a link to that and a couple of other pieces that you've done attached with the podcast. You begin that article with the OECD's fragility framework. Why do you see that particular definitional framework as being useful?
Yeah, so the piece that you mentioned is something that I did with George Ingram at Brookings, and it's been part of a year's worth of various roundtables that we've been conducting with various stakeholders in Washington and abroad. From the government and from think tanks and from NGOs and the UN and others. And so I've been watching this space for a while, and the OECD has really tried to be very experimental in how it's thinking about fragility, in tune with an emerging approach or emphasis in the development community on resilience. And the idea here is that we're trying to promote transitions in these contexts from fragility to positive forms of resilience. In essence, how are fragile states dealing with multiple interacting risks from conflict and disaster and extreme poverty, and how are they building capacities to deal with those risks? How are they mounting collective efforts to be more robust in terms of managing political problems and economic problems, etc.? And what the OECD has done with this framework, which came out in 2016, is to really represent the various dimensions of fragility, from political and economic fragility to societal and environmental and security. And so with the framework, you can see, at least at a 30,000-foot level, what a particular fragile state is grappling with. Underlying the framework is this definition of fragility from the OECD that locks in this emerging consensus that fragility is a condition or a context where the risks exceed the capacities for dealing with those risks. So, for instance, Japan has very high risks to earthquakes and tsunamis. And it's not fragile because it's got some pretty good coping and adaptive capacities as well. The skyscrapers are built with springs underneath, got advanced technology for early warning and seismic sensors. So the ratio from risk to capacity is pretty tight. Whereas in fragile places, for example, in Haiti, the earthquake really just devastated massive infrastructure, caused significant displacements and loss of life. Chile, next door during the same year, had a bigger earthquake with only a fraction of those losses. And so you can see this sort of ratio playing out, high risk and low capacity. In addition to plotting out fragility across these dimensions, the framework itself is basically trying to measure the risks and the capacities in each of those sections. So, for example, on the list, you can see Syria has very high security fragility and political fragility and societal fragility. But Bangladesh has a higher degree of economic fragility and environmental fragility. Now, I should say that the purpose of the OECD framework is not air. These are apple and orange types of comparisons. It's very hard. But it's trying to point out to practitioners and scholars, pay attention to these imbalances of risk and capacity, for example, in Bangladesh, which you might not think of as fragile otherwise.
Sure. And so, that makes sense, yeah.
So I like the OECD framework because it includes a set of countries that you would think of as fragile. There are 15 on the list that are deemed extremely fragile. And they're the ones that you would also see on the Fragile States Index, which is a popular index for measuring, really trying to measure stability, but it has the fragility name to it. And you also see indicators used from the World Bank's harmonized list of fragile situations. And it pulls from that list as well. But it includes countries that aren't dealing significantly with security fragility. And oftentimes, fragility gets, it gets reduced to conflict.
Sure.
And so you'll see on the list, you'll see, for instance, Ethiopia, Kenya, Tanzania, Cambodia. They're all dealing with different levels of fragility that aren't captured, per se, on the other lists. And in fact, Brookings came out with a paper last week highlighting the severely off-track countries for meeting the SDG goal for ending extreme poverty. Yeah. And on that list are 31 countries, 30 of which are on the OECD fragility list or framework. And only a fraction of those are in others. And so it becomes, I like the list because it's a more inclusive set of countries that are really quite fragile, including the extremely fragile ones that are dealing with security and, you know, just a kind of a cacophony of different fragility factors altogether. But this one gives you a range of fragility variations so that many actors from the development community, from the governance community, from the security community can all kind of find issues that need to be solved in those spaces, as opposed to others that are just skewing towards, say, the conflict community or others that are looking at just sort of the government side of things.
No, that makes sense. I can certainly...